This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Our fears about being hospitalized were reinforced by a recent study which found that 44,000 to 98,000 hospital patients die each year as a result of medical errors. That's more than the number of deaths caused by highway accidents, breast cancer, or AIDS. The study comes from the Institute of Medicine, an affiliate of the National Academy of Sciences. President Clinton responded to this report earlier this week by calling for mandatory reporting of serious medical errors and the creation of a National Center for Patient Safety. My guest, Dr. Mark Chasson, is one of the authors of the Institute of Medicine report. Dr. Chasson is a professor at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine and Senior Vice President for Clinical Quality at the Mount Sinai New York University Medical Center. He's former commissioner of the New York State Department of Health, and he practiced emergency medicine for 12 years. I asked him about the type of medical errors he and his colleagues found.
I think it's fair to say that we don't know as much as we would like to, but what research there is available suggests that medication errors are particularly common. Errors that lead to preventable infections in hospitalized patients are very common. Errors that lead to preventable falls, for example, in hospitalized patients are also fairly common. And some of those turn out to be medication errors. But those are some of the kinds of errors that are very common.
Now, I know someone who actually had a knee replacement done on the wrong knee, much to his horror. And I think most people have some kind of horror story like this that happened to a friend or relative or, God forbid, to them. how does something like that happen? Do you feel like you understand that anymore now?
Well, I think we really don't understand it as well as we should. Operating on the wrong side of a patient with a particular problem on usually a leg or an arm, but sometimes, as we've seen all too frequently, in the brain as well, is not as uncommon as one would hope. And there turn out to be, at least in the cases that have been reviewed extensively, a large number of problems. And they result from the lack of having a systematic way of making sure that every patient, every time, has the right operation done. So, for example, if one case of the wrong side of the brain being operated on, an X-ray was reversed in the operating room and the lesion appeared to be on the wrong side because nobody noticed that the X-ray was put up backwards. Patients frequently now mark their limb that is to be operated on with an indelible magic marker away from the operative site, but where it can be visible to those in the operating room. There are a number of systematic ways that we could be putting in place to prevent these, and that's a really big part of the problem.
You're saying that patients have to take it upon themselves to mark the right limb with indelible magic marker?
Well, some hospitals have put a system in place where the surgeon visits the patient the night before or the morning of or prior to the patient's being sedated and so out of it they can't talk, and discuss the operation, and then together or the patient by themselves actually marks the limb that is to be operated on to increase the likelihood that the right limb does get the surgery.
Now, you say a very typical problem that the Institute of Medicine report found is medication errors. People given the wrong medication, or I imagine the wrong dose of the correct medication. What are some of the typical causes of those medication errors?
This is an area about which we do know some, although the studies are from a limited number of hospitals. And it seems to be pretty clear that the sicker the patient, the more interventions the patient is undergoing, the more likely errors are to occur. And that frequently happens in intensive care units, in patients that are elderly with many chronic illnesses receiving many drugs. One of the most common reasons for error is that many drugs need to have their doses adjusted depending on how well your kidneys are functioning, how well your liver is functioning, how large or small a person you are. And those calculations are difficult and time-consuming. And if they're not checked very carefully using automated reminder kinds of systems and checking systems, humans are prone to make mistakes when they do those calculations.
Now, I imagine that the need for this has grown because there's so many new medicines, and I think so many people are taking more medicines at one time than people used to be prescribed.
Well, that's exactly right, and that that you put your finger on a very important ingredient in this set of problems that I think is relatively underappreciated. 20 or 25 years ago, we really had much less effective treatment to offer patients than we do today. I tried to get an estimate of how big an issue this was, and what I looked at was the number of articles in the research literature that are published from experimental randomized trials. That's a kind of research design that really gives us the best information about what works and what doesn't work. And over the last 30 years, there are some 86,000 articles published from randomized trials, but 30 years ago, they were published at a rate of about 100 per year. And spread over all of medicine and surgery and obstetrics, so you could pretty well learn all of them that were relevant to your practice. But now they're being published at a rate of 10,000 per year. The last 5 years, there were more published than in the previous 25 combined. So we're faced, as physicians and as other providers, practitioners of healthcare, with an avalanche of really good information about what works and what doesn't work, but we're functioning under the old paradigm of how physicians and other practitioners are expected to behave, which is to have all the information that they need to make decisions in their heads at the time they need to make those decisions.
Where should they have the information now? In a computer?
Well, computerized systems and other kinds of decision support systems are extremely valuable. Computers are a part of the answer, but I don't think they're the whole answer.
Is there something else you'd recommend in addition to computers for helping doctors keep up with the amount of new information coming out and therefore being able to recommend just the right thing for a patient?
Well, I think there are a large number of implications of this phenomenon of rapidly increasing information. Good healthcare today requires a team approach that includes, in a hospital setting, a pharmacist, a social worker, a nurse, frequently a respiratory therapist. We don't train physicians, we don't educate them to be part of teams, to rely on other team members for key parts of the delivery of healthcare, and we don't train them to expect that they will need other sources of information to make decisions when they're taking care of patients. We train physicians in the expectation they'll make perfect decisions every time, and that is just increasingly not possible.
When it comes to medication errors, what percentage of the errors do you think are caused by doctor incompetence, doctor sloppiness, and how much of it is more a problem with the system? That doctors need to have a better system.
Yeah, you raise a very good point. I think that with respect to medication errors, they are so common. Preventable injuries due to medications occur at a rate at a hospital about the size of mine, 800-900-bed hospital, of about 10 per week. 10 patients per week are injured due to medication errors. That is, those injuries are entirely preventable. And this is not rocket science. You know, we're talking about patients with a known allergy to penicillin receiving penicillin, a patient receiving 10 times the dose of an antibiotic when that antibiotic hurts kidney function. So these are entirely preventable injuries, and the vast majority of those, especially the ones that occur in hospitals, are, I believe, at least from the literature that we've been able to look at, the vast majority of medication errors are probably system related. That is, there are so many different components, steps along the way, from the time a physician thinks of the right medication to order until the patient actually receives it, that the opportunity for mistakes just gets multiplied many, many times. Now, those kinds of errors require system approaches. That is, we need to construct systems that, instead of anticipating that physicians will be perfect decision makers, expect that normal human error will creep in and build those systems to anticipate error and compensate for it before it does harm. There are also, however, as your question indicates, some physicians, some nurses, some other practitioners who are so egregiously bad and make so many mistakes so often that they need to be dealt with differently and in a disciplinary fashion, educationally, hopefully, if they can be improved. But if they can't be and if they continue to make mistakes and do harm, they need to be disciplined by the licensing process.
Doctors are famous for illegible handwriting. When I was a kid, I used to think, well, though, even though no one I know could possibly decipher what this prescription says, a pharmacist will genetically be able to have the skills required to read this handwriting because they're a pharmacist. I no longer believe that they have special skills in reading handwriting. Is this a problem, too, when you're getting a prescription filled?
Yeah, I think that belief is probably in the same category as the tooth fairy. And what's really quite remarkable is that more errors don't occur because of bad handwriting. What usually happens is there is a dialogue between the pharmacist and the physician's office, or the physician's office actually calls in the prescription, so the nurse in the office knows exactly what the medication is supposed to be and calls it in. There are many checks and balances in these systems that prevent a lot of these errors from occurring. Nevertheless, errors still do occur because of bad handwriting, and we need to take even more steps and computerized entry, order entry, typing in of prescription orders is a good way to combat the handwriting problem.
My guest is Dr. Mark Chasson, co-author of the Institute of Medicine report that found 48,000 to 98,000 hospital patients die each year as a result of medical errors. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dr. Mark Chasson. He's co-author of the Institute of Medicine report that estimated that medical errors kill between 48,000 and 98,000 people in the U.S. each year. And this is the report that led President Clinton to urge states to require mandatory reporting of medical errors. Now, one of the problems that you mentioned, one of the problems your report found was a lot of infections that patients get while they stay in a hospital. And I think this is something that a lot of people who are about to enter a hospital live in fear of, that the problem they're entering with will be fixed, but yet they'll emerge with a new infection that will cause a lot of problems. And this is often a staph infection that's very difficult to treat. Did you find that these infections are often caused by problems in hospitals that don't have to exist, problems that could be addressed?
They're absolutely preventable causes of hospital infections. Probably the most easily instituted but most difficult to maintain is simple hand washing. Hand washing between patient contacts, both before and after patient contact, is one of the most important ways of preventing the spread of hospital organisms. But you're quite right that hospitals, from an infectious disease standpoint, are very dangerous places. They are the places where the most powerful antibiotics are used and where resistant organisms congregate because the most vulnerable hosts or patients are there. And we have produced, along with a very powerful armamentarium of antibiotics, a tremendously resistant universe of germs, in large part because of our overuse of antibiotics. I'll come back to that. I said 24 million Americans got antibiotics for colds and other viral infections in 1992. That's about a half a billion wasted doses of antibiotics. And that's the single most important preventable cause over the long run of these very resistant organisms. So having said those two things, the other kinds of problems that result in preventable infections are the misuse of antibiotics, errors in the use of antibiotics in hospitals. For example, we know that if you're very careful about giving antibiotics prophylactically in some surgical procedures, you can reduce the incidence of infections after the operation. But you have to give the prophylactic antibiotics only at the time surgery begins and stop them very soon after surgery ends. That's the maximal protection. But what we find when we look What we find is that lots of times the antibiotic continues long after the surgery is over and the patient gets an infection with a resistant organism. But talking to the physician about precautions for infection, making sure that everybody is alert to that possibility is also a very good idea if you're going into the hospital.
You mentioned that patients often fall while they're in hospitals, and that's something that your study found could be avoided, that the falling is often a function of a medical mistake that could be avoided. Examples?
The most common preventable reason for falls goes back to medications, and it's the particular combination of a tranquilizer or a sedating medication in an elderly patient. That both inside the hospital and outside the hospital is one of the most important preventable reasons for falls. And again, it's a very wise idea for patients who have elderly relatives or elderly spouses or other loved ones to be sure if they're in the position of advising their elderly relative about medications or working with their physicians, that the number of medications that elderly people are on is really kept to the absolute minimum, particularly those with that have sedating side effects or that have the side effect of reducing blood pressure when you stand up. That's another common circumstance when elderly people fall.
President Clinton has made a series of recommendations in response to the Institute of Medicine report on medical errors, the report that you co-authored. His main recommendation is that states require mandatory reporting of medical errors. This is very controversial in the medical profession. A lot of doctors fear that this is going to drive medical errors underground, that doctors or hospitals won't want this information to be public, so they just won't mention that it happened. They'll try to cover it up. What are your thoughts on this recommendation of mandatory reporting of medical errors?
I wouldn't say that was the main recommendation of President Clinton's package. It certainly wasn't the main recommendation of the Institute of Medicine report. It certainly is the one that has sparked the most debate and controversy.
Are you concerned that mandatory reporting of medical errors might drive medical errors underground because doctors live in fear of medical malpractice, live in fear of losing their credentials?
That's a part of the problem. When I was the state health commissioner in New York, for example, New York has one of the oldest programs of mandatory reporting. There were far more important problems than that. We've had mandatory reporting for over a decade in New York State. And the basic problem is that it's extremely difficult to get the definitions of the kinds of mistakes and outcomes that you want reported to be objective enough that everybody reports with the same frequency, the same thoroughness. And if you don't have a massive police force of auditors going around checking behind the reports, which is really totally infeasible given the magnitude of this problem, there's no way of getting all of the data from all of the, in this case, hospitals or nursing homes. And the second part of the problem is I don't know of any state, and again, New York has the most experience here, that has successfully completed the other side of the loop. There's no point in having reporting if the entity that receives the reports cannot efficiently and in a timely way analyze those reports, find out what there is to be learned from them, and report back to the hospitals or the nursing homes or whoever is reporting the data on errors. And to my knowledge and my experience, that part of the loop has not been successfully closed in a way that we could replicate anywhere in the country.
Is there such a thing in the medical profession as an honest mistake, where somebody makes a mistake that has serious consequences, but it's a mistake where they shouldn't be severely punished because under the circumstances it was a regrettable but an honest mistake?
I'm not sure that honest is the best characterization.
Right.
Because the problem really is not so much honest or dishonest, but mistakes that result because human beings are fallible. Every human being in every line of work makes mistakes. What we have not done a very good job of in healthcare is learning from other sectors of society and industry where failure is also a life and death matter. Air travel is the best example, I think, because what they have found is that reducing mistakes doesn't happen by punishing the individuals who make them or by expecting them to be perfect and to always make the right decisions. Those industries have reduced errors, serious errors, to very, very low levels by creating systems, backup systems, training systems, checklists, the pre-flight safety checklist that pilots go through before every flight, every time, that anticipate the kinds of mistakes that human beings are prone to making, expects that they will occur, and then puts compensatory mechanisms in place so that they don't do harm. That's what we need to put much more effort into in healthcare, in addition to, as I indicated earlier, ferreting out the physicians and other providers who are just so egregiously bad in their performance that they pose a danger in and of themselves, and no system will be able to prevent those errors.
Dr. Chasson, thank you very much for talking with us.
It was my pleasure.
Dr. Mark Chasson co-authored the Institute of Medicine report on medical errors. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.